think there might be a misunderstanding here. The scientists aren't surrendering their lab. Not yet.
Then why have you been wasting my time? Dietz demanded. Perhaps I can explain?
Florimel said.
If we surrender now, you will destroy us. You've already demonstrated this intent. On the other hand, if we stay on the planet, the Nerbs will eventually lose patience and erase us.
Not the Nerbs themselves, Dietz said. Battlefleet 921 is on the way. When it gets here, your time and ours will have run out.
I understand, Florimel said. And I believe I have a solution that will allow all of us to keep breathing.
They all looked at her with squinty eyes. No one looked happy, and I figured after they heard her out, they were going to be even less happy than they were now. After Florimel had explained her plan, they all looked shocked. I felt it was my civic duty to step in and clarify. You see, I began, the key is that no one in Battlefleet 921 can suspect that we did this, or that the lab people did it. The whole thing has to look like an accident.
Why not blame it on the lab people?
Graves asked.
Because we won't participate if you do,
Florimel stated flatly. I knew that wouldn't buy any bacon with Graves, so I raised my hands and gestured for calm. That's just part of the reason. Remember that the Nerbs are touchy, and the Magua make them look open-minded. If they think their representative, that guy Slur, died because of some kind of screw-up on our part, well, Earth might as well be toast.
Are they really that unreasonable? Tribune Dietz asked. All the time?
Yes, Graves admitted. As a longtime member of Varus, I've run into our galactic benefactors on several worlds. They're never friendly or forgiving, quite the opposite.
We just fed them Winslade so they could torment him to death, she said. You'd think that would massage their egos.
The Magua think a great deal of themselves, I said.
All right, then, Dietz said. I'm putting you in charge of this insane plan, Graves.
She stood up from behind her desk and walked out. Everyone watched in surprise. She turned back at the doorway.
Make sure you don't screw anything up, she told Graves. I'll review every second of this briefing if things go badly. Otherwise, I'll delete it to eliminate the evidence.
Then just like that, she was gone.
What a cast-iron bitch, Graves said. She's trying to disassociate herself, Earth be damned.
There's always a good reason why a top officer has survived so long, I agreed. You'd better get your troops rolling. I need a shower.
Not so fast, McGill, Graves said. You're going in with the first team.
My mouth sagged open. I hated when it did that, but I think it's just part of how my brain is wired.
But, sir, I said, I don't have any technical expertise. This first move against the galactic ship is just a matter of wiring.
Uh-huh. You're not getting out of this one. They'll need security, and your unit will provide it.
That's a lot of people. Our odds of being discovered will rise dramatically.
Graves turned to Florimel again.
How big did you say their central hold was, and what percentage of it was full of collected trophies?
The space enclosed is estimated to be 3 cubic kilometers. Approximately 2/3 of that volume is occupied by a wide variety of...
Of junk, right.
Graves finished for her.
The Magua like to steal a few choice artifacts from every world they annihilate. I don't know why they bother. They don't seem to do much with it.
Maybe they just like stacking it up, I offered. Like pack rats.
Make sure you provide the next Magua you meet with that theory, McGill,
Graves told me.
In any case, my point is that there will be plenty of room to land a team and invade the ship without sounding an alarm.
We don't really know that, Primus,
Florimel objected. Graves pointed at me.
He just ported into that hold and messed around for a while. No one saw him. In any case, that's my price for agreeing to this mission. McGill goes along.
This insistence honestly surprised me. I wasn't sure exactly why Graves was pushing it so far. Maybe he wanted me to watch the rogues, just like he'd said, or maybe he wanted me to die and play scapegoat. It was hard to tell which it was. Anyway, there wasn't much time left for fooling around. We went down to my unit's cube, suited up the troops, and headed back to the floor of the open hold. The first trick was to get everyone positioned right. Florimel started off by walking through the poles of the gateway on our ship and transporting herself back to the planet. That's when Graves showed up again. It seemed like he'd been watching me every second. He had with him a large power cart. On the back of it was a watermelon-shaped object with digital readouts on the sides. I had seen such things before. In fact, I had carried them to their destinations and set them off. The object in question was an antimatter bomb. Chapter 49. Just seeing the bomb made me nervous. I'd handled such weapons before. They were 10 times as powerful as a good old-fashioned H-bomb from Earth. They converted mass to energy on a 1-for-1 basis, which was a dramatic improvement over other explosive devices. "Whoa," I said to Graves, waving my gauntlets at him.
"Don't interfere, McGill," Graves said. "It's the only way. We'll roll this into the gateway, and their dome will vanish. We'll have completed the mission Magnet Slur set for us."
"Hold on," I said as he prepped the bomb. "They have stasis projectors down there, sir."
"What?"
"You know, the same things Claver used to freeze me when I tried to bomb him with one of these back on Earth." He squinted at me.
"You're bullshitting me again."
"I've got proof, sir," I said, and I shared my body cam vids with him. They showed Claver being trapped as he teleported in.
"I'll be damned," Graves said. "You think they've set these things up to catch anyone coming through this gateway?"
"Stands to reason," I said, using my best poker face. "We can't take the chance. We haven't got any stasis fields aboard that we can use to catch them in return. All they'd have to do is roll our bomb right back here and kaboom." I made wide circles with my arms. Graves got the idea, and he looked worried. Turning to Leeson, he handed him the bomb. Leeson's eyes flew wide. "What do I do with this, Primus?"
"Take it to your techs. It's set to go off in a few minutes."
Alarmed, Leeson ran off, shouting for Natasha. Graves didn't even watch him run. He was a philosophical and fatalistic man. If we all died in a vast explosion, well, he knew he wasn't going to feel a thing, so he didn't worry about it.
"McGill," he said, "you just vetoed our best option. Now we're back to your original cockamamie plan."
"So, whose idea was it just to roll in the bomb?"
"Tribune Deitch came up with it, of course. She brought it up to me, and I immediately agreed to it. The plan was a brilliant scheme, if only due to its simplicity."
"But now you're switching back to my plan?" I asked. "Don't you have to approve that with Deitch?"
"You heard her. She put me in charge. That's her standard mode of operation. She knows she can always fry me for failing later on. That's the key to upper management, McGill. Always have a chosen sacrifice all prepped up on the altar in case things go wrong."
"I'll remember that, sir," I said. "But I'd feel better about this if I knew you believed in me." He shrugged.
"You're the best chance I've got left. You can't know how much it pains me to say that, but it's true. No one else has led commando missions aboard enemy starships. You're it."
I had to admit he had a point there. He left, and Florimel arrived with her team of nerds just in time to see him go.
"What was that about?"
she asked, pointing after Graves. "Nothing," I said. "He was just wishing us all the best. What did he say? Glory and honor. He shouted something like that, didn't he, Sargon?" "He sure as shit did," Sargon lied for me. I could always count on him to back up anything I said. Florimel looked a little confused, but she stopped asking questions. I could have told her the truth instead, of course. After all, I'd saved her people from a quick ride up into the stratosphere. But I knew women well enough to know that wouldn't have earned me any points at all. Her team came through, and they brought another pair of gateway units with them. The plan was to link the planetary surface to our ship, then link our ship to the NERB vessel. That way we'd chain all three locations together in two steps. The whole thing presented an interesting set of tactical possibilities. As I thought about it, I better understood why Central had sent us out here to steal this excellent tech rather than destroy it.
"The gateway is hooked to power,"
Keevy said. "What about that, subsystem Leeson gave to Natasha?" I asked her. She gave me a sharp look.
"We're still alive, aren't we? The situation was contained."
"That's a relief," I said. "I'm glad things worked out so easily." Keevy gave me the stink eye.
"You have no idea what you're talking about. We should switch jobs sometime. Maybe you'll have time to appreciate what all the techs do for the grunts."
"Oh, really?" I asked. "You want to switch places? I can let you play officer and take charge of this ride in the hostile territory if you want." She balked at that idea.
"Forget I said anything."
"Done," I said promptly. "Now and forever." Giving me a strange glance, Keevy rejoined her fellow techs, and I summoned the entire unit. They came bubbling out of the cubes nearby and gathered, fully kitted out. Many of them were so fresh from their revivals they still had wet hair. Sarah was one of these, and her eyes were looking kind of glassy. Harris was glaring at me with his arms crossed.
"Oh, right," I said. "Leeson, Sarah is now part of your platoon."
He looked at her dubiously. "What am I going to do with a whack job light trooper?"
"Put her on point,"
Harris suggested. There were twitters from the group at that.
"She'll be your stenographer," I told him in irritation. "Now, team, huddle up."
Reluctantly, the surly group came together. Our defeat down on Rogue World hadn't done any wonders for our unit's morale.
"This is the finish," I told them. "We've been honored with the privilege of striking a blow for Earth."
They looked at me seriously. Most of them had no idea what we were going to do. Probably that was for the best, but I had to let them in on it at some point.
"We're going on a very special mission," I said. "We're going to board the NARB ship."
"Excuse me," Harris said loudly.
"Did I hear that correctly?"
"You did indeed, adjunct," I told him. He looked like he was barely listening. He was working his tapper, no doubt contacting Graves to rat me out. After a few seconds, he looked up again, shocked.
"That's right," I said to him. "This action is fully sanctioned by the Legion Brass. We're going to board the Imperial Destroyer and immediately disable her communications module. There can be no signals going in or out of that vessel 15 minutes after we board her."
"What if we fail?" Leeson asked.
"Then, Earth might well be screwed."
Harris pointed at the gateway.
"That thing could carry 1,000 troops, he complained. "Why not flood their damned hold? Why not?"
"Because," I interrupted him, "if they realize they're under attack, before we knock out their communications module, they'll send a deep link message to the battle fleet."
"Right," Toro said, catching on. "Then the fleet will know we joined the rebels, and they'll bomb Earth instead of this worthless rock we're orbiting."
"Bingo," I told her. "There's no use holding any secrets from you people at this point. Everything depends on us being successful. We board, we move fast, and we take out the comm module. At that point, our mission will be complete. The rest of the Legion will take care of the rest of the ship."
"The plan is insane," Harris said. "We're supposed to be commandos, but we've got no idea where we're going. Does anyone even know where the comm module is located?"
"We do," Florimel answered. "At least, once aboard, we'll be able to detect it."
Harris laughed bitterly. "We're trusting the rebels? We were dying all over their dome like bugs on a windshield just yesterday."
"This isn't an optimal solution," I admitted, "but Command thinks it's our only shot."
"All right. I want everyone kitted up. Pack light. We'll do or die pretty fast. No sense weighing yourself down with the useless gear."
As everyone moved to obey, Harris approached me. Seeing his move, Toro and Leeson joined him.
"Sir," Leeson said,
"with all due respect, this plan seems half-baked."
"Half-retarded, more like," Harris snapped.
I gave him a glare, and we locked eyes. He looked down at the deck after a second or two, but he still looked pissed. We'd been chosen because we had more experience than any other group with boarding ships via teleportation, I explained.
That's only because you went crazy 2 years back against the squids, Harris pointed out.
Be that as it may, we're it.
Centurion, Toro said. I'd like to transfer. I've got no experience with this sort of mission, and I've got heavy troopers in my platoon. We'll just slow you down.
Harris laughed bitterly. Request denied, I said firmly. We're sending a full unit. We're not sending more or less. Our group has fought and died together now through some hard times. We'll do okay, and we might need heavy troops to win through. There's no telling what kind of onboard defenses those galactic sludge bags will have. None of them were happy, but at least Leeson didn't argue with me. He beat his hands together until his troops were hustling to the second gateway unit, which was still inactive. Florimel approached me next.
It's time, she said. Who will teleport through and set up the gateway on the destroyer?
Looking around the group, I shook my head. I wanted to delegate this duty, but it didn't feel appropriate. When something's got to be right, you do it yourself. That's what my dad had always said. I'm doing it, I told her, and I suited up. Chapter 50 Florimel gave me a tiny kiss before I teleported out. That made me smile. She was human, mostly, but I'd only just taught her about kissing the night before. That made the gesture all the sweeter somehow. Holding the heavy gateway unit in my arms with the plasma carbine dangling from straps, I had her tap the start button on my chest. The world shifted, blew, and wavered. It was a familiar effect to me by now. For a second, I was in two places at once. That was the weird thing about short hops. If you flew over light years, teleportation gave you plenty of time to think and worry, but not when it was just a ship-to-ship jump. One instant, I was on Nostrum watching the lights waver and my vision dim. The next, I was on the broad deck of the Nairb ship at the same time. Over a period of about a second, that transition changed again when the deck of Nostrum and the staring faces of my unit faded away. At the same time, the hazy image of the Nairb ship grew stronger and more substantial. Then it was over. I stumbled, but my footing was only off a little. I looked down and saw my heel was fused with a cable. Cursing, I put down the gateway unit and drew my combat knife. I'd have to trim my boot down, or the cable, in order to walk. Fortunately, my foot hadn't merged up, just my boot. My natural instinct was to cut the cable, of course, but I hesitated. Where did this cable go? What was it powering? Who would come to check if I cut it? Baring my teeth in a moment of indecision, I looked around. The hold was dim-lit and cavernous. It was full of doodads from a thousand worlds. There were odd machines, crumbling pottery statues, and these weird baskets woven with what looked like strands of steel surrounding me. Instead of cutting anything, I removed my boot carefully and left it there. Walking with a hobbled gait, I searched for a power coupling to plug in the gateway. But I wasn't finding anything. I began to sweat in my suit, even though my exposed foot was stinging from the cold of the deck. Already this mission was off to a clumsy start. I feared it was only a matter of time until it went tits up completely. Deciding to follow the power cable I'd landed on, I finally found a terminus. I unplugged an environmental meter of some kind that was probably meant to keep the atmospherics in the hold stable for the benefit of the trophy collection. The coupling fit. That wasn't a surprise, as the rogues had known where I was taking this thing and counseled me accordingly. Both fittings were galactic standard. Shoving them together, I felt, as much as heard, a satisfying click in my hands. The gateway poles began to glow. Oh, shit, I said, realizing I hadn't set them up right. I hobbled forward, trying to push the two poles apart. They were supposed to be aligned with a precisely measured meter of separation between them. Feeling an urgency of purpose, I kicked the farther pole away, and it fell over instead of sliding over the deck. The two poles were now about a foot apart, and one was lying on the deck itself, sparking. A stream of curses and one hopping frozen foot slowed me down, but I squatted and got a grip on the second pole to stand it upright again. Just then, the poles interacted. There was a flickering of released energy. Someone, something, stepped through them. Instead of a clean transition, the traveler came through garbled. There was a gauntlet holding a rifle and a face, sort of. The face was merged up with its faceplate. Dragging the squirming, smoking soldier out of the way in case more were coming, I righted the two poles and looked down into the still-living eyes of this mission's first casualty. It was Sarah. Damn. That cold bastard Leeson had found a use for her, I guess. He'd sent her through as a scout. She tried to talk, but her words never made it out of her throat. There was no air in her lungs to push with. Fortunately, the girl died fast. I grabbed her left arm, which was relatively intact, and I worked her tapper. I erased her last minute of life from her memory. That was a trick Natasha had taught me. In Sarah's case, I figured it was a mercy. Pissed off, I picked her twisted body up and stepped back through to Nostrum's deck. "Here," I said, handing Sarah to Leeson. His face screwed up into a grimace. He'd seen plenty of gruesome deaths, but few soldiers had been twisted into a smoldering pretzel before. "I wasn't finished setting up the poles yet," I said sternly. "The plan was for me to walk back, proving the connection was valid." Leeson hung his head. "I'm sorry, Centurion," he said. "You were gone a long time. We've only got 11 minutes left." "Wrong," I said. "The timer starts when we're all across. Let's not frig this up any further, all right, people?" No one argued. Leeson left Sarah on the deck for the bio people to dispose of. Shoving on a fresh boot, I led the march back onto the Nairb vessel. Every member of my unit had a good look at Sarah as they passed through the poles. It did them good, in my opinion. It sobered them up. This was no game, and it was time for everyone to act like the pros we were. "Okay," I said on tactical chat. "Are we all through?" Harris, Toro, and Leeson reported their counts. We were all in the enemy ship's hold. Minus one. The last to report in was Florimel and her team of rogue nerds. "If we get separated by more than 100 meters, I told them, "we'll have to use hand signals. Our stealth transmissions won't reach further than that." Our latest communications tech was pretty good for clandestine work like this. We'd long ago perfected radio packets that simulated background emissions. Our techs carried computers that could relay signals that were virtually undetectable. The system automatically linked us into a network that measured and mirrored our environment, making the whole thing dynamically adjust itself. As a secondary advantage to our tech, the signals quietly jammed other communications coming into and out of our local area. Taking a second to mark our destination, I put a green arrow on top of the chamber we were trying to get to. Fortunately, it wasn't far. We had about a kilometer of boxes to walk through, then we'd reach the communications module. It was located on the belly of the ship, to the stern. There wasn't much of an antenna to worry about, just one big transformer and a power supply that could feed the deep link. Interstellar communications were possible, but expensive. The Galactics had a monopoly on the technology, no surprise there. They allowed worlds to talk to one another in real time, but ships almost never had the tech, at least not among human starships. What was too expensive for an Earth fleet was no problem for a galactic ship. They'd never seemed to lack for budgetary funds until recently when civil war had broken out among the core worlds. Particularly in the case of a scout ship, there was no point to its operation without a deep link. But even when you had one of these pricey gizmos that used entanglement theory to communicate over light years instantly, The systems took a lot of power and had a slow baud rate. The signal was thready, and messages were usually done with text and small, low-resolution images rather than full-motion video.
Okay, I said, looking over my team. Toro, you stay here and guard the gateway. Harris, you take point with your light troopers. I'll be right behind you with Leeson's weaponeers and our techie guests.
Got it,
Harris said, trotting off toward the green arrow on the horizon. I let him get ahead of me a ways before following. In the meantime, I left instructions for Toro. Don't break radio silence once we're out of range for the stealth network. Not even if you get discovered. Just destroy everyone who comes at you and hold your position.
You don't want to know if we're getting hit?
She asked me in surprise. No, adjunct, I said. The stealth will break at range. The enemy will then know there are invaders in more than one part of the ship, and with a little triangulation they could figure out what our goal is. We can't afford for the deep link to report that they have borders from Earth.
Understood,
she said. Wheeling around, I ran after Harris. Leeson and Florimel followed me. The whole mission felt crazy already. It was such a risk. We hadn't detected any automated surveillance equipment down here among the dusty trophies, but that didn't mean it wasn't here. The Galactics were advanced, after all. But there wasn't any time for second-guessing now. It was time to do or die. Or both. Chapter 51 We caught up with Harris in short order. Technically, his team was faster than ours, but since they were on point, they had to advance more cautiously. My group moved with the relative certainty of being second in line. Harris, I contacted him. Any sign of anything?
Not really, he called back. There's lots of dusty junk in here, but most of it is inert. So far, I haven't seen a single monitoring system, but they could have flying drones or something.
I've got Kiwi laying out buzzers, I said. They're reporting back nothing, so far.
They're probably too snooty to run security systems down here, Leeson said.
What do you mean? I asked him.
Well, you know the Galactics and the Nerbs as well as anyone, Centurion. They think they shit chocolate. Who would dare to come aboard one of their ships and sneak around?
I have, I said, a couple of times. There was some snickering on command chat in response, but nobody called me a liar.
McGill,
Harris hissed out about a minute later.
We've reached a hatch. There's no apparent way to open it.
We'll be right there.
When we arrived, we realized he was right. The Nerbs had built a ship without a door handle on the inside of the hold.
Now we know why they didn't bother to put security systems in here, Leeson commented. Should I have Sargon burn it down, sir?
Hold on. Florimel? Have you got a way we can get through this, short of destroying it? She examined the hatch with interest.
We don't have much time, sir, Leeson said. 7 minutes. Florimel, talk to me now, or the hatch is going down.
That will make a lot of noise, she objected. Any sensor in the passages beyond would register a change in heat, pressure.
I waved my arm at Sargon. He was already shouldering his belter and sighting on the hinges.
Focusing tight, he said. Stand clear, please.
Florimel continued to run her hands and an instrument box over the hatch, not listening to us.
Maybe she's trying to delay us, Sargon said on a private line to my helmet. I'll burn her right through, sir. Just give me the word.
Stand down. You better get your girlfriend away from that hatch, Centurion, Leeson complained.
Girlfriend?
Della asked, looking back at them. Apparently she hadn't heard the rumors yet.
Florimel, I said, ignoring them all. Either open the hatch on the count of 10 or I'm taking it down. We'll revive you back on Nostrum, if we get there again.
She kept probing, and suddenly she paused, reaching for her bag. Sargon tensed up.
I bet she's blowing our cover. This smells like a trick. I don't trust these rebels an inch.
I put my hand on his shoulder. Hold your fire. That's an order. He relaxed, slightly, and we all heard a loud click. That was followed by a groan of metal on metal. The hatch probably hadn't been opened in years. It swung wide, and we surged into the passageway beyond. I caught up to Florimel in the shuffle.
How'd you do that? I asked her.
The hatch wasn't locked, she explained. It was meant to be opened by touch. The temperature changes and aging. The hinges were bound up. I sent in nanites to worm between the leaves and lubricate them.
I laughed, and I thought about how we'd almost blasted her unfairly. All's well that ends well, I figured. We rounded a bend in the passageway, which was a good 6 meters wide, and ran right into something we weren't expecting at all. There was a machine of some kind. A robot, I guess. It was bulky, built like a steamroller with arms. The arms were welding along the bottom deck.
It's a maintenance drone, Florimel called out. Don't—
But it was too late. Varus Legionnaires are notoriously trigger-happy. I count myself as one of the worst, in fact. The light troopers scattered while weaponeers fired shafts of energy into the unit. It buzzed and ceased functioning, pouring out smoke.
It's transmitting a distress signal, Keevy told me.
Burn it down, I ordered. Several weaponeers crisscrossed the thing with beams and plasma bolts. It finally died. What now? Leeson asked me. Keep moving, that's what, I told him. Double time, we're really on the clock now. We raced past the ruined machine and approached our goal. It was another big hatch, but this one was locked. Explosives, I ordered. Take it off its hinges. A team of techs pasted nanite gel and bombs to each hinge. They stepped back and a pressure wave rolled over us. The sound was deafening, even through my helmet. Harris led a rush of light troopers into the chamber beyond, and snap rifles began chattering on full automatic. All clear, he called out. I stepped inside and found 3 NARB techs on the floor, leaking green fluids. They said something about us self-executing, Harris joked, but we must have heard them wrong. Is this what it feels like, McGill? What? To kill a NARB? I know you've done it before, now I get it. Feels great. I clapped him on the shoulder. There's hope for you yet, Harris. Florimel, shut down that deep link. She advanced into the room and pulled a power coupling.
We should retrieve this. Take it back to Nostrum. It's very valuable.
Not more valuable than this mission, I told her. I'm not lugging anything with us other than our own dead, if we have any. With our primary mission objective accomplished, we raced out of the module and back up the passageway. I'd marked a new green waypoint on our HUDs. The gateway wasn't far, and time seemed to go by faster than it had on the way down. Sir, Harris called to me as we picked our way through the vast stacks of goods. I'm seeing smoke up here. Concerned, I pressed forward. We were too far for the stealth communication systems to work, for sure, but I didn't care. With the deep link down, the NARBs couldn't call for help anyway. Toro, I called. What's your status? There was nothing, just dead air. Toro, do you read me? Nothing. Harris fan out, I said, switching back to our tactical channel. Leeson, take the center. Everyone advance with caution. Jubilation had quickly transformed into fear. We had no idea what we were walking into. She's probably stepped out on us, Carlos said. The second the mission timer was up, I bet she ran for it. Could be, I admitted, but I somehow didn't think that was the case. Harris reached the open area where we'd set up the gateway first. Looks bad, he reported. I see bodies. They destroyed the gateway, sir. We're cut off. Who did? No enemy casualties. Whatever hit Toro took her out without a loss. Either that, or they carry their dead away with them, too. Do a body count, I ordered. Is Toro among them? Yeah. You better come take a look, sir. Cautiously, I moved up to where Harris was. The scene was grim. About half of Toro's platoon was there, dead. They'd been in a firefight, that much was obvious. Where are the enemy? I demanded. Florimel was kneeling to examine the broken gateway poles.
The poles were deliberately destroyed.
And Toro is right here. Her demolition pack is gone. Her body had taken hard damage. A leg had been torn clean off, despite her armor. Florimel, Keevy, what happened here? Keevy looked the scene over while the rest of the troops formed a paranoid circle.
heavy prints. They scratched neutronium deck plates,
Florimel said.
Galactic automatons,
Kibi said, looking it over.
That's what I think this was.
Where do they go? I demanded. There's only one answer to that, Leeson said, squatting next to us. They passed through the poles and invaded our ship. It's a two-way street, after all. I nodded, getting it at last. And Toro managed to blast the poles to stop them, or at least to break the link. Do you think all of them got through? How many are we talking about? Kibi shrugged.
It's a big hold. There could be any number of them here with us right now.
I stared at her in shock.
They're here? In packing crates or something? They were,
she said.
But we activated them, or the Nerbs did, from the bridge.
Looking around with new alarm, I began to shout orders. Everything had changed. Our mission had been successful, but it was supposed to be only a first step in putting down the enemy ship. Instead of having the Nerb ship at our mercy, all we'd done was warn her and get our own vessel invaded. I had to wonder what Graves and Deitch were saying about me back on Nostrum right now. Chapter 52 The Nerbs hadn't put surveillance equipment in their hold because the hold was capable of taking care of itself. We found the broken crates about 100 meters from where we'd first landed. We hadn't seen them because they'd been placed in the hold in the opposite direction of our goal. As they weren't in our pathway when we stormed toward the deep link module, we'd never noticed them.
Whatever they were, Carlos said, whistling as he looked over the damage. They were big.
What makes you think they're all gone, Ortiz?
Harris demanded, poking through the wreckage.
If there are more, Carlos said coolly, they're not in this stack. They would have to be somewhere else. Makes sense the mass of them were right here in the center of the hold.
I didn't comment as I was too busy examining the evidence firsthand. The crates were weird-looking. They weren't box-shaped or even cylindrical. They were polyhedrons. They had 12 sides, and they were about 5 meters tall. Blasted open from the inside, they resembled high-tech eggs that had hatched.
What are they made of?
I asked Natasha as she pawed at the nearest of them. She was running chunks of the crumbling foam-like material into an analyzer's input port as I watched. She examined the results and looked up at me.
It's organic, she said, but artificially grown.
Eggs? I asked. They look like eggs, but on a grand scale and with the wrong shape.
Right. Whatever laid these wasn't some kind of bird. It was an artificial life form, if it's really alive at all.
Hey, shouted Harris from 12 meters off. Hey, come look at this. Ortiz, I want you to suck on these prints and give me an apology.
We moved over to where he stood and examined the floor he was pointing at. The scarred-up deck in this spot showed a line of wreckage away from the center of the hold. It wasn't as large a region as that which led toward Toro's last stand, but it was undeniable. Natasha rushed to the scene at my side.
I was expecting this, she said.
You were?
I never bought your theory that Toro had destroyed the gateway poles. I think these guardians did it, which means some of them are still here.
Oh, I said, feeling dumb for not thinking of that.
One,
Natasha said, squatting over the bizarre prints and counting them.
Two, three. My best guess is that three of them went deeper into the hold instead of attacking our troops.
But why do that?
Carlos asked.
The chances were better hitting invaders all at once, unless...
Unless what?
Harris demanded.
Unless there are more crates, and some of them went off to release the others?
We all looked alarmed.
Natasha, I demanded, how far does your stealth jammer system work?
Maybe 500 meters, no more than that.
They might be outside that region. Maybe they tried to communicate with the bridge and couldn't. Some might have moved off to do that.
Either way, Centurion, Leeson said, we can't let them perform their mission.
Right,
I said.
We have to go after them.
Moving forward, an arm reached out and hooked mine. It was Leeson's gauntlet that gripped me.
Sir, he said, you're the only one with a teleport suit. No one else can go back to Nostrum and get another gateway set up. Without reinforcements...
You're right, I said, peeling off the suit.
Kiwi, you put this on.
Okay,
she said quickly, seeing her chance to escape the hold. She got into the outfit, set the coordinates, and powered up. Soon, her outline wavered, shifted blue, and she was gone.
Why'd you send her?
Carlos asked me. Because we need fighters here, not extra tech. She knows how to run one of those suits better than you do, and we have Natasha in case we need something figured out. He didn't argue, but he didn't look totally happy. Kiwi and Carlos had had a long-term thing going, and he always suspected me of putting a move on her. At times, he'd been right, but today I just wanted to complete our mission. Harris, have your people armor up with functional breastplates and try to give them all plasma weapons instead of those snap rifles. He did so, shouting and kicking rumps when they didn't move fast enough. The light troopers weren't fully rated on plasma weapons, but they were going to get a crash course today. As there was nothing functional left to guard at the center of the hold, I ordered my entire force to advance along the trail of wreckage. Whatever these hatchlings were doing, it couldn't be to our benefit, and we had to stop them. About 200 steps later, we found something new. Three more torn open cartons, eggs, or whatever we were dealing with.
Six of them now, Carlos said. Long odds.
Nonsense, I said. We'll take them out. Sargon, your people are our best shot. Go for tight, focused beams, using multiple cannons on each target, just in case they're as tough as I think they are.
I'm on it, sir, the veteran said.
He'd spent most of his years in Legion as a weaponeer, but he'd recently moved up to veteran in rank. In this situation, he was perfect to lead the hunt. I had the feeling we were going to need all the firepower we could muster to deal with this threat. Advancing with increased caution as we got closer to the wall of the hold, we were all on edge. Each slight sound made the troops jump, including myself. But when the attack finally did come, it was from an unexpected direction. When we'd first located the evidence of the things from the eggs, we'd seen the deck plates scratched and damaged. I'd figured the enemy were of such weight and possibly made of metal that they dented the floor the way one might scratch a surface by dragging heavy furniture over it. But that wasn't it at all. What happened to us must have happened to Toro's crew. The enemy dropped down into our midst from the ceiling. Leeson, God love him, was the first to die. Something huge and dark with claws like the devil himself fell from the roof and landed right on him, squashing him like a bug. He didn't even get a shot off or scream or nothing. The monster was flesh, but not all flesh. It had metal boots with claws, or maybe that was just how the feet looked. It was hard to tell. Standing in a crouch, its fleshy body was mottled and lumpy, like an alligator or a stone-carved gargoyle come to life. A mouth opened, showing a pink interior, and it made an awful, low, rumbling sound. My men didn't need any special orders after that first half-second of shock passed. They craned their necks to look up, rifles lifted, and sure enough, the ceiling was crawling with these monstrosities. They began dropping all over the place. Plasma bolts and laser carbines, even a few snap rifles, began to fire. No one was holding back. They were all on full auto, panicky, and falling back in disarray in every direction.
Concentrate a fire, I heard Harris roar. Mark my target and take one down at a time.
Sargon's group was near the monster that had flattened Leeson, and they lashed it with powerful beams. Surprisingly, it didn't go down right away. It smoked and lashed out with those black, crusty-looking limbs. Metallic claws on its feet swept a trooper up and pulled him close in a hug. The head dipped and came back up, the soldier's helmet crunching in those powerful jaws.
The damn thing ripped Carlson's head off, Sargon shouted. Burn it down!
The startled weaponeers finally got their act together and lanced it until it fell in a smoking heap. The key strength of human weaponry has always been keeping the enemy at a distance and firing lots of lethal stuff at them in an organized fashion. This foe, however, had messed all that up. They were right in our midst, and it was hard to concentrate fire without hitting each other. "Sargon," I shouted, "hit the ones on the roof. Half of them are still up there." Three were down now, and three were on the ceiling. Sargon relayed my orders, marked his target on every weapon he has HUD, and one by one, the three on the ceiling were destroyed. We still had two left in our midst, however, and they'd been busy. They'd each bitten large chunks of meat off a couple of troopers while simply smashing down and walking over others, crushing them. Blood and smoke were everywhere. I ran up behind one of the monsters, placing my carbine where the spine should be and holding the trigger down. That made a smoking hole, but didn't stop it. The thing didn't seem to feel any pain. I pissed it off all right, but I didn't manage to stun it or get it to cower back. Grabbing one of my sad sack light troopers, it lifted her up and that maw opened wide. Everyone knew how this was going to end, and we winced, showing our teeth in sympathy. The girl in question was screaming, but she didn't die easily. She had on a breastplate from the fallen heavy troopers Toro had been leading. She pulled out something blue and glowy. "Grenade!" I shouted, hurling myself backward. Others nearby scrambled for cover when the gravity weapon vanished. The usual blue-white light came, but it was muted. The creature lurched in shock. Finally, something had gotten the full attention of one of these nightmares. He keeled over, stone dead. The rest of us looked around, but there were no more targets. They were all down. Harris and I approached the monster, which still clamped tightly on the girl and those claws. Harris began to smile, then to laugh. "She ran that grenade right down into his belly." "Yeah," I said, "either that, or it snapped her arm off before she could let go of it." "Either way, sir, that was a win for us. We outdid Toro all right. Just wait until I tell her. She'd lost at least twice as many regulars, and I didn't see a single dead monster." I looked around at the carnage thoughtfully. Maybe she got hit by a lot more of them. We counted about 20 broken eggs. "Yeah, maybe," Harris admitted. "If 20 had hit us, we'd have been toast. What now, sir?" That was a damned good question. I looked around at what was left of my unit, and I saw every tired, desperate eye meeting mine at once. Sometimes command wasn't what it was cracked up to be. Chapter 53. To give myself a chance to think, I ordered everyone to patch up and cannibalize equipment from our dead. That took about 5 minutes, during which I desperately hoped I'd hear something from Legion Varus or Kivi or just about anyone. It didn't happen. There was no relief column, and our communications equipment wasn't powerful enough to reach across a star system to talk to those still aboard Nostrum. I would have dearly loved a report from that direction, but it wasn't going to happen anytime soon. "There are two options," I told my tired, haggard-looking crew. "We can sit here at the LZ and wait for Kivi to return, hopefully with reinforcements. Or we could break out of this hold and invade the ship." There were a lot of surprised faces looking at me now. "Sir," Harris said, "are you serious about that second idea? We're getting our asses kicked in the hold. Why would invading the ship itself be any easier?" "Legionnaires don't look for easy paths, adjunct," I told him. "We look for effective ones. By now, the crew of this ship has to know we're here. They have us bottled up, and they're clearly not without effective defenses."
"That's my damn point, sir. I vote we stay put and wait for the cavalry."
His position was typical of Harris, but it wasn't unreasonable. We'd been pretty badly beat up already. Not even Varus people relished violent death. My unit was at something like half strength, and morale was breaking. "All right, we'll wait," I said, to everyone's relief. "But we'll have to set up a defensive position someplace else. They'll probably have this place zeroed by now." That was an alarming thought,
and I got them all up and moving again. No one wanted to see any more gargoyle things dropping from the ceiling. As it was, everyone kept looking up and peering over their shoulders into the dark. Leading the way, I took them to a corner of the hold. There was no retreat from here, but we would be able to see an enemy approaching. Natasha, I said, set up your stealth network and a chain back to the LZ. When someone comes back, have a buzzer tell us. She went to work on that, while Harris and I set up firing positions. As Toro's group had wiped and Leeson was gone, I was short-handed for officers. I took Leeson's platoon, and Harris ran his light troopers around in circles. He had them all using plasma rifles like they knew what they were doing. But we both knew they were very green. For about half an hour, nothing really happened. Every minute that passed left us feeling more and more worried.
What's the holdup?
Harris demanded, haranguing Natasha for the 10th time.
Is Keevy taking a shower or something?
There's no way of knowing what happened to her, adjunct, she told him.
That's great. That's just great. We're screwed. You should have gone yourself, McGill. Keevy probably got lost.
I smiled at him. I'll take that as a rare vote of confidence, Harris. But you're right. It's been too long. We can't sit here any... Right about then, we heard something. Something loud and deep. It was a massive clang of metal on metal. Everyone stood up, looking around. Objects around us, light ones like cloth and paper, began to flutter and rise into the air. We'd been in space for long enough to know what was happening.
Faceplates closed, I shouted. Pressure readings, Natasha.
We're down to 70% of one atmosphere and dropping, she said.
We've got a breach, I said. Most likely it's intentional.
The nabs are getting smart,
Harris said.
They opened an airlock to vent the Atmo into space.
He was probably right, and we all knew it.
We can still sit tight, can't we, Centurion?
A light trooper named Jenna asked me. I shook my head. No, probably not. They know we're here. They'll take action for certain now, and our relief troops are late. Time to get back into this battle, people. Shoulder your gear. As we marched toward the nearest exit, I thought about how grim our situation had become. We'd been an advanced force, a commando raid, really. But now we'd become the entire boarding party. The ship was being defended, clearly. Things took an even worse turn once we reached the hatch. While we worked to open it, the air pressure went to zero in the hold. They'd opened an external hatch somewhere and let all the air out into space.
Sir,
Natasha called out to me, her radio crackling.
Radiation levels are spiking.
I looked back and I saw a brightening glow. A white light had grown in the middle of the hold and it looked like starfire up close.
What the hell?
I asked. Natasha was looking at it too.
McGill,
she said,
I think we're in warp. The radiation signatures, everything matches. They've turned on their drive and opened a hatch.
I was finally catching on. The Nerbs had more in store for us than a simple suffocation. We'd be frozen, asphyxiated, and microwaved before they were through. It was just a matter of picking our favorite form of death.
Get this hatch open, I roared at Sargon, or we're all dead.
He was already working on it. No subtlety was required now. He burned the hinges off, melting away heavy metal like butter with the close-range application of his plasma cannon. Several other weaponeers helped him, and steel was turned into burning vapors and white-hot liquid. Finally, the hatch clanged down. About then, they turned off the gravity. Not all ships had artificial gravity, but the big ones normally did. This ship had been maintained at something like 125% of Earth normal. Very suddenly, that shut down. The big hatch floated up still red hot, and it flipped around until it struck a weaponeer's helmet. The helmet starred and broke. The man screamed briefly as all the air was sucked out of his lungs. Then his blood boiled and his eyes popped out. Exposure wasn't a pretty way to go.
Get through the hatch!
Harris was shouting.
Help each other,
I called out as the survivors surged forward. Grab and drag, people. We were weightless, but we had magnetic boots and plenty of training. We hand-over-handed our way through the hatch and into the passageway beyond. It wasn't a big improvement. The doors at both ends of the passage had already slammed closed. Either the ship had sensed the breach and loss of air pressure, or the Nabs were actively trying to box us in. "There's no staying here," I told them. "Keep moving. I'm feeding a simulated ship's layout to your tappers. Follow it to the bridge if command is wiped out." None of the troops responded. All I heard over the comm channel was labored breathing and cursing. I opened up the system to allow anyone to transmit. There weren't so many of us left that it would be all that confusing. We advanced on magnetic boots, clanging and cursing as we went. Walking on magnetics always felt like you were slogging through snow with gum on your shoes. The Nabs sprang their next surprise on us at the forward hatch. It linked this cargo area to the upper decks, and apparently they'd decided to make a stand here with their defenders. A dozen or so gargoyles kicked the hatch down as we beamed the hinges into slag. That crushed two men, as the gravity had been switched back on. A gust of air swept over us, as apparently the next region was pressurized. The gargoyles began to smother and die, but they still had plenty of fight left in them. They tore up another man and bit the head off a third before we'd beamed them to the floor. Mostly, they died of asphyxiation. "Ha!" I boomed, trying to sound hopeful. "The captain is an idiot. He's killing his own defenders." With gravity helping again, we jogged forward at a steady pace. We scrambled over lumpy bodies and reached the next hatch. This one swung open as we approached, making us paranoid. "Break it up," Harris shouted. "Don't all bunch at the door." They scattered, with two unlucky souls chosen at random sent in to have a look around. "It's empty, sir," the scouts called back. "Advance," I ordered.
"McGill," Harris beamed me privately, "it might be a trap."
"Of course it is, but we need to get away from that radiation behind us, and there's nowhere else to go." He sucked in a breath and said nothing. He knew I was right. When the last man passed through the hatchway, it clanged shut behind us. Gas hissed, filling the space inside with air.
"It's breathable, sir,"
Natasha pronounced a moment later. "Keep your helmets on," I told them all. "Unless you run out of oxygen, don't trust yourself to take a single breath." Unexpectedly, a sound rang out, and then we heard a translated voice.
"Rebels," it said, "your invasion has failed."
The voice was garbled and artificial, coming through speakers somewhere in the passageway.
"For the sake of your personal honor, I, Magnate Slur, demand that you self-execute."
We paused, and I looked at the walls around us. "Slur?" I called out. "Will you spare our world? If we do as you ask." Harris came up to me and grabbed my shoulder, giving me a wide-eyed, "Are you crazy?" look. But I shook him off.
"No," the voice said. "You've gone too far. Your sins are too great, too unspeakable. Your very existence must end. You must be expunged from the galaxy like the plague you truly are."
"At least you're an honest alien," I told him. "That's good to know." Then I led my troops forward to the next hatch. They followed me in a panicky rush. Chapter 54. There was no more pretending or parleying. It was them or us. It was that simple. Magnate Slur, however, didn't seem to have gotten the memo. As we pressed on through brute effort and force of will, taking passage after passage, he continued to demand our surrender and orderly execution.
"I don't think this guy gets it," Harris told me. "We're not his slaves, not anymore."
"That's right," I said. "We've bitten the hand and tasted the master's blood. Like any pack of wolves, we only want more." When we got close to the bridge, a new enemy faced us. They were Nabs, armed with plasma harnesses. These weapons were different than our rifles in that they were meant to operate when the trooper had no real arms or legs.
Nabs had flippers. They were semi-aquatic creatures who in their natural habitat could live on land or in the sea. Using the harnesses allowed them to manipulate a weapon just by looking our way with their squishy heads and willing it to project a beam in our direction. Three men went down moments after the hack.